We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Twos Cruise. Ahoy! I am your Captain Ty Hildebrand. Joining me as always is Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein out here on the high seas. Dan, how are you?
Well, you really brought it. You've been up since, what, 3:30 a.m., 4 a.m.?
You gotta yell out here, I can't hear you because of the wind!
Yeah, no, there is a lot. There is a lot. I originally, just to peel back the, what I've done, onions, I've done carrots, just to peel back those shallots a little bit, because this is just a tiny item, Ty.
Right, right.
I was looking up, and maybe this exists because we play, you know, games, big picture college football games on the Twos Cruise here, which I'm sure you'll introduce officially. But I was looking up facts about wine and how wine is stored or consumed on ships. And I found a couple of things about galleys, Ty, but there's not a lot of info about wine on ships and on sea. Mm. And I'm a little bit disappointed by that. We'll get there. But I'm still a little bit bummed out about it because otherwise, this is probably going to be the strangest Twos Cruise yet.
Well, I can't wait. And I know everyone out there is on the edge of their seat. Thank you so much for downloading. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Solid Verbal on Apple, on Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, anywhere you get your podcasts, Pocket Casts, you name it. Mm-hmm. Just hit the subscribe button, give us a review, throw us a rating, all that stuff helps. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com, check out all the old stuff. So today, again, on the Twos Cruise, last week we played Arnaz Battleship, trying to sink some of our preseason assumptions that were already on the verge of sinking. Mm-hmm. Today, we're back to kind of the old format from a few weeks ago, where we've got a couple mini games, all, of course, nautically themed here on the Twos Cruise, because we're now in international waters, can sort of take it as it comes and, you know, just see where the wind takes us, Dan, if you will.
Sure.
All, of course, is college football related. We'll be doing our preview show on Thursday morning. But in the meantime, Dan, what do we got for the fine folks tonight?
Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3 games real quick, and then we have a seafaring school of the week. We haven't done it since we did, what was it, Evergreen State and the Gooey Ducks?
Yes.
About 3 weeks ago.
Correct.
We did a Q&A, and then, yeah. So it's been a little bit since we did that. I think it was Stony Brook originally. Is that right?
Okay.
I believe so. Stony Brook on Long Island. So we've got a new seafaring school of the week, which we'll get to at the end of the show. I don't think there's anything. I had thought about doing like a playoff thing because I think the rankings come out soon. I don't think it's this week, but next week the first playoff rankings come out.
Mm.
Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. Sure.
There's not a ton of like big injury news. So I just figured let's get into the games if that's okay with you.
we can get into the games. I should point out this is the last show before the end of Brocktober, right?
Well, technically, yes.
I believe this would be our last Two's Cruise before the end of October.
Yes, this is the last Two's Cruise of Brocktober, but we have now seen the last Saturday of Brocktober, right? That's over.
Correct. That is correct.
Because the next College Football Saturday is when we get into November, which I think we're going to have a related game to that.
Yes.
But yes, so on a technicality, so for instance, Baylor still plays in Brocktober because Baylor, I think West Virginia play Thursday night.
Yes, correct.
So there is a little bit more football to be played in Brocktober, but you're right, Ty. You're absolutely right. Solidverbal.com/store for Two's Cruise shirts.
Absolutely.
Any more pertinent info you want to get to before we get into these wonderful,
games? Let's dive in. I'm excited about tonight. These are some good mini games we got going here.
All right. Captain, yes. Our first game, cue up the sound, is called Seaworthy?
Seaworthy. Now, yes. What does that mean?
Seaworthy. Okay. So it's a term that means you have a boat, you have a ship, you have some sort of cruise line, you have a warship, an aircraft carrier, you have a schooner, whatever. It has to be ready to go out to sea. It has to be ready to float on water and navigate. That's just baseline, what you have to have going. And so I have five specific situations. I'm not saying, is this team ready to win a national championship? Is this team ready to go to a bowl game? We've done sort of those kind of things already. So I have very specific and I think attainable goals for five teams. And we are going to evaluate, and you can use any of the following to say whether or not you feel like this team is seaworthy for their very specific bar.
Mm.
It's, do they have that master and commander tie?
Right. Ooh,
yeah. That's okay. Coaching smarts. That's a full staff. That's a dependable sideline presence to steer the ship, as it were. How is their hull in terms of this is the body? This is the mass of the team. Offensive line, defensive line. Are they winning lines of scrimmage? Sails. Do they have the talent to propel, to speed this thing forward on both sides of the ball? And then below deck, Ty, reinforcement, depth, intangibles. What is either something that... Of those items, that is a strength or weakness and a reason why a team can or can't hit the bar I'm going to give out. So,
okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sure.
All right. Do you believe, first one, in Virginia Tech, who now controls its ACC coastal destiny, do you believe in them having the ability to navigate the coastal strait?
Okay, important question.
Yeah.
What if I don't think they're seaworthy? Do I have to blame the below deck or sails or hull or skipper?
Yeah. What is the reason? What is the reasoning? Or I mean, maybe it's just the waters ahead are too choppy.
Well, I think I would chalk that up maybe not to choppy waters, but pirates.
Oh,
pirates, okay. In the form of road tilts at Notre Dame and Virginia and home tilts against Wake and Pitt, all still on the schedule, and.
Sure. Feels like choppy waters.
Feels like choppy waters, yeah. Or pirates or whatever kind of impediment out there on the open seas you want to attribute this to. That seems like a rough schedule to me. And granted, that Notre Dame game might not count against them in the ACC, but still, of some of the other games that are ACC, I'm not confident at all that they're going to be able to navigate those. If you look at Virginia Tech so far, they are aggressively average on both offense and defense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had all the injuries last year, and that was a problem. And on defense, they were terrible. I expected they would get a lot better on defense, especially under Bud Foster. That hasn't happened. Offensively, I guess maybe a little bit better from where they were a year ago, but right. That ain't saying a whole lot. So I'm not that confident in their seaworthiness here to navigate that coastal strait. Not at this point, although they are a very quiet 5-2 at this point.
But who is in the coastal then, Ty?
Well, that's sort of the problem, isn't it? Because
right. We
talked about it on our Sunday recap show. Mm-hmm. There is a legit possibility there could be a 7-way tie in the coastal.
Right. And importantly, they're 2-2. The Hokies are 2-2. And the other teams with two losses are North Carolina, who they've already beaten, Virginia, who they haven't lost to since 2003, Ty.
Right.
They haven't lost that game since 2003. The number 4 movie at the box office that weekend in 2003? Master.
Master and Commander.
Commander. I am just here to bring things full circle.
Such a long wait for the payoff, but...
I know. It's a pretty short wait.
Look, the point isn't so much that I am not confident in Virginia Tech as I am not confident in anyone in the ACC Coastal at this point. I really think it could be almost anybody. Mm-hmm. And from what we've seen in the early going from Tech, it's not been all that inspiring. So no, seaworthy, I don't know, talk to me at the end of the year. For now, though, I'm not putting a whole lot of confidence behind it.
Okay, well, the Notre Dame game will not affect their ACC hopes and dreams.
Right.
And the fact is, Wake Forest and Pitt are at home. Georgia Tech does not seem like a difficult road tilt, and Virginia is apparently an unlosable game for Tech. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say right. Virginia Tech can navigate that straight. We disagree.
All right. Okay. The next one on here, I see Baylor conquering smooth.
Oh, yeah.
Big 12 waters. Now, what do you mean by smooth Big 12 waters? I have a bit of an issue with that statement.
So I don't think the waters are all that choppy in the Big 12 right now as we record, Ty.
See,
coming off of the Oklahoma loss, which I still think Oklahoma is a very good team. Please do not misunderstand me. Do not get me wrong. But West Virginia at TCU, Texas at Kansas, Texas will be healthier, I think is still a pretty smooth way to finish the schedule, given that Oklahoma and Texas are both in Waco.
All right. So you have here conquering smooth yes. Big 12 waters.
Yeah.
I'm not confident because I think they already made it through the smooth water portion of their schedule.
So I'm not saying they're winning the Big 12.
Well, conquering implies they're winning something.
I understand you. I'm going to go as far as saying they will play Oklahoma twice. How about that?
Oh.
They will make it to the Big 12 title game.
Oh.
So in terms of that,
okay.
can they conquer smoother Big 12 waters than we thought before? The fact that Texas, when beat up, does not have the depth to maintain a very high level of play.
Right.
And Oklahoma is more susceptible than we thought.
So I'll say this.
Yeah.
To go along with the format you defined up front.
Mm-hmm.
The optimism I have for Baylor comes from the skipper in Matt Rhule.
Sure.
Who knows how to build a winning culture all throughout the ship. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. He did it at Temple. He's doing it again now.
Yeah.
And maybe a combo of the skipper and below deck intangibles. They've got talent. Consistency's been a bit of an issue last
sure.
two seasons as he tries to rebuild the ship. But I think the defense has played pretty well this season. You know I like Charlie Brewer. He's had some big moments so far this year. And I like the way Baylor's playing. They are playing with a lot of confidence. But for me, if I'm confident in anything, it's Matt Rhule. And I just, the grit that Baylor has played with the last two seasons that is, again, emanating out throughout all their games here in year three under him.
Yeah, and they have the three, I think, trickiest teams left on the schedule outside of, I mean, they proved themselves against Iowa State, but the TCU defense, the Oklahoma offense, and then the Texas, I guess, unrealized talent, those are all left on the schedule. I think it's more of a sales thing to me. I think S-A-I-L-S, and that is, I think they've been very good at generating big plays. They've been balanced on offense, and they've been really good at limiting big plays on defense. Why is that, Ty? Why is that? There's a snow advisory on that sideline.
This cloud cover coming up from Waco.
That's right, Ty. Phil Snow has done an outstanding job with this defense. He constantly just improves defenses and turns them into very good units, and he's done the same thing with Baylor. So I'm going to say yes. I think Baylor can reach Dallas or Northern Texas, whatever.
I agree.
For the Big 12 championship
game. I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Next up. Okay. Who put this one on here?
Yeah, you know it.
Oregon's warship positioning itself in the playoff golf. Playoff
yes.
golf.
Yeah,
capital
golf.
P, capital G. Proper noun, playoff golf. Could we go golf of playoff? Or is that a little too clunky?
I like the playoff golf because it's Persian golf, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And
okay.
I refer to Oregon as a warship not because I think they are able to destroy all who come near, but because of the way they actually play, which is not a speed unit necessarily. It's a matter of relying on large dudes to pave the way. And so there is something about a warship that reminds me of their style. But they are being talked about as a fringe playoff team.
Right.
The North seems to be well in hand with tiebreakers over Washington and Washington State. They've beaten Cal. They've beaten Stanford. They should beat Oregon State. They're in a pretty good spot to win the North. But to get to the playoff, they have to fully win out and probably get some help. And that winning out includes USC twice, perhaps, because USC is the tiebreaker over Utah, or beating USC and then Utah in the Pac-12 title game. That's right. The only path forward is winning out and probably doing so in an impressive fashion after two extremely close calls against the Washington schools. So, do you believe in the Master and Commander, Hull, Sales, Below Deck, whatever? As it relates now, we've seen Oregon against Auburn. We've seen them against Washington. I don't know how much in terms of high-level teams beyond that there are on their schedule. Are you a believer in that positioning?
I am a believer in the remainder of the season for Oregon and them doing as
that
much
they'll
as...
play it?
No. Well, that too.
Okay.
But I am confident that they will do their part to get in position. Now, by virtue of that Auburn loss, it may be too little too late. And as we've seen, there are some teams that were in front of them that are losing, and maybe that'll continue to happen. But I agree with you to the extent that they need more help. So I'm confident that they're going to position themselves within striking distance of the playoff. Yes, absolutely.
So you think early December, they're 12-1?
You don't
favor Utah on a neutral site if that's who they face, and or USC on a neutral, and obviously they have SC
in LA
this coming week.
Yeah, let's see what happens this weekend. If they get by USC this weekend, mm-hmm. they're going to run through Arizona State, and Oregon State. And I know Oregon State's a civil war and the rivalry and all that, but they should beat Oregon State.
Yes, they should. They should finish out their final three games. Arizona fired their defensive coordinator and linebackers coach today, which is never a good sign for how things are on one side of the ball. ASU, we've seen some struggles, but it was a close game last year in Eugene. But it seems manageable after what ASU's offense has looked like
sure.
at times. So
I think the best chance for Oregon is to somehow draw Utah out of the South. That would
rather
than USC twice. I think that's a even though it doesn't have maybe the
headliner status
of playing USC.
Right.
Playing Utah would probably be a higher level game between two more highly ranked opponents.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And that would propel them maybe into more of the conversation should they win because of the Holland Sales, you know, the mass along the lines and
right.
what they're doing defensively has been pretty impressive this year. And obviously they've got the talent to succeed here with the Sales. So I think their best chance is to run the table and it has to be over Utah.
I don't think they're going to run the table.
Wow.
I think with how they've looked the past couple weeks against good quarterbacks, I think the best of Keaton Slovis and or the best of Tyler Huntley, one of those two, just it's going to get them. It's just they're not a 12-1 team. There just seems to be too many mistakes on both sides of the ball, or not even mistakes, but digging themselves into unnecessary holes. So I'm going to say no. I don't think the Warship is in a position to go to the playoff golf.
So let me ask you a question, and I ask this only because I'm not familiar with your native great state of California.
Yeah.
But is there a place close to Santa Clara and Levi's Stadium where the Oregon Warship could dock in time for Red Box Bowl version 2?
I don't think they're going to fall that far, Ty. Although, you know what, Ty? You have that special Levi's Stadium experience that really gets you ready for the Pac-12 championship game that you can only get in either, I guess, the national championship game was there last year, or the Red Box Bowl.
All right.
Is that where the Red Box Bowl is, or is it where the Giants play? I don't remember.
I think it's Levi's Stadium.
Okay. Next team.
Next team you've got here, LSU weathering the SEC West squall.
Yeah, the Red Box Bowl is in Levi's Stadium.
Okay. I believe in LSU, maybe not to beat Alabama, but I like the Hall, I like the Sales, I like Below the Deck. I like pretty much everything about this team.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like Alabama on the schedule.
Well, that's what it is. Weathering the SEC West, sorry, I should be more specific, means can they get through the storm that is the Alabama portion of the schedule and then not have a letdown if they do, whether it's Ole Miss, A&M, whatever.
Let me ask you this, okay? And maybe this veers a little bit out of the format of this game, but we have spent an inordinate amount of time over the last couple of years trying to look at Alabama's opponents mm-hmm. and figure out which ones pose the stylistic threat that you need to beat Alabama. Which teams played the right kind of offense to maybe pose a challenge? Does LSU meet that criteria?
They've got big receivers, which I've always said, I think they've got a fearless quarterback, which I think is true. I think the fearlessness of Joe Burrow has been pretty well documented this year, even if the Texas win is a little bit less
I'd agree with that.
To be at the time. But having, yeah. I think Terrace Marshall's about 6'4", Justin Jefferson 6'3", Thad Moss 6'3". There's good size. There's good size to really put pressure on Alabama's defense. The actual big key, though, for this year's iteration of Alabama is an ability to run the ball. And LSU has been very quietly so good on the ground. Teams have been able to move the ball that way against Alabama. We saw it a little bit from South Carolina. We saw it a little from A&M, I believe. We saw a little from Ole Miss with John Rhys Plumlee. And LSU does it better than all of those teams because Clyde Edwards-Helaire, very, very good. He's very, very good, Ty. And so I think that gives them a leg up that they didn't necessarily have. The balance on offense that, yeah. you know, the closest recent game was probably 2014, whatever the Anthony Jennings, Blake Sims overtime spectacular was. So short of both teams having subpar quarterbacks within the context of their usual skill level, I think LSU has a really good shot even on the road. I think they've got a really, really good shot. So for that, you know what? I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a believer of LSU finally breaking through, even though they've been putrid against Alabama recently. This year feels special. I don't know. Something in the sea air.
Something is in the air. And I like their rushing attack. I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. They've been surprisingly efficient running the football. And not to say they haven't been in the past, but usually it's one or the other. Well, they're about the same on both the passing side of things and rushing mm-hmm. side of things in terms of efficiency. And that's a really balanced offense. That was what right. I think a lot of LSU fans were hoping for. They've already got the big wide receivers. Defense, I don't know how they're going to cover Alabama's wide receivers.
Yeah, I know
they've
that.
Got a good defense and a good secondary and all that, but I don't know how anybody can cover those three or four or five wide receivers that Alabama trots out.
They've given up some big plays. Absolutely. And just in general, that defense.
So this game actually strikes me as one that could be a shootout. I'm not supremely confident that LSU is going to beat Alabama. Mm-hmm. I think they're good enough. I think they've got the talent. I think they've certainly got the quarterback and now the offense that will make them a different kind of threat to Alabama.
Yeah.
But it's a coin flip for me right now.
Well, here's the other question is, what percent of health does Tua need to beat LSU? Because he is going to be on a bum ankle.
Right.
50% Tua, a 50% ability to step in and plant and do whatever is needed to run around and extend plays, 50% won't do it against LSU.
I would agree. Opinion. No, I mean, I think it's got to be...
Is it a 75? Is it 80, 85, 90?
Like,
what is that
80,
number?
85, 90?
Yeah. And God... I think that's a big iceberg, Ty.
Yeah.
That's a big old iceberg. So that's why the salty air is doing something to me this year. And we'll see as we get closer to the game what I actually pick. But yeah, I'm feeling it, Ty.
Okay. All right. Where are we going next?
Final game. Final team. Minnesota
Ooh.
And their pirate ship. That's right. Row that large boat. Does that pirate ship have room for 11 imprisoned wins? Are they you know, taking prisoners, like capturing skiffs.
Never. Yeah, I gotcha.
11 wins means, at the very least, they are splitting Penn State and Wisconsin.
Correct. I do not have confidence in 11 wins.
Okay. Why?
But I don't know. I don't think they're winning both Penn State and Wisconsin. But you okay. could make a pretty good case. I don't think it's happening against Penn State. Now, I saw they announced the game time for that one, and mm-hmm. it's going to be a super early game.
Nooner.
Which a lot of folks are like, why wouldn't they do it at night? I love the fact that they're doing it early. Catch them sleeping. I think that plays in Minnesota's favor. I don't know if it plays to their favor in terms of getting game day to come to town, but at a minimum, I like that move by the athletic department. I don't think they're going to beat Penn State. I do think,
I mean, it's the athletic department and TV. Yeah.
Well, sure. I think this is sort of a Baylor situation where the coach is all piss and vinegar and the team is jacked up. Mm-hmm. And they might not beat Penn State, but that Wisconsin game. That Wisconsin game could be very low scoring and very interesting given the fact that both like to run the ball so much. Who knows what Wisconsin's headspace is going to be like later in the year? Mm-hmm. Who knows what Minnesota's playing for? You know, I don't know. That's the one. If it happens, it's that Wisconsin game. I don't think they've got enough ammo to beat Penn State.
Okay, so we saw last year, what, Wazoo, a first-time game day host, if Minnesota's able to get game day, and there's just so much energy in the air. And Wazoo obviously had a great game, and this year's Penn State team is definitely better than last year's Oregon team in terms of opponents.
Sure.
Penn State, I believe, both of these teams will be coming off of a bye. I like Minnesota's chances almost against Penn State more than I like them against Wisconsin.
Really? Why is that?
So Penn State doesn't strike me as an 11-1 team. Do they strike you as an 11-1 team?
They didn't before the year, but the way the defense has matured has really been interesting. And if they can get more of a semblance of a ground game, something more reliable on the ground that I could hang my hat on and know what
that's,
I can expect.
That's the worrisome thing, yeah.
Week to week, then yeah. I think Sean Clifford's fine as a passer. Gets a little yippy here and there. But by and large, the system works for Penn State's offense. They've got Hamler. They've got Freiermuth. They've got talent elsewhere. If they had a little bit more consistency running the rock, I'd feel better.
I think you're totally dead on. They just feel like a 10-2 team to me. And a 10-2 team generally means they're really, really good. They probably drop something to a team that's clearly better, which looks like it should be the case against Ohio State, but who knows? And then play down for a game. And I think that's entirely possible against Minnesota. They've played the pass really, really well. I think they're going to force, like everybody should, Sean Clifford to beat them. And not saying like, just get it to KJ Hamler and let him do work. Like, he actually has to dictate drives and actually has to control the game himself. And I'm not going to say the salty air thing like I did for LSU for Minnesota, but I think that's just a tough spot on the road to play down to a team and lose something, like almost like they played against Michigan State last year.
Yeah.
Where they just drop something dumb playing down to a team. And what if Penn State's up two with 2:17 left? Are we due for a late game James game? Are we? It feels like we are.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they survive that against Pitt, and that's in the past. I don't know. My case for Minnesota is the fact that, or the case against Minnesota is they've played nobody. And all due apologies to Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, Rutgers, Maryland. But they've played 5 of the 6 worst teams in the Big Ten, and they have number 6 on the last part of their schedule. So I don't think it's fool's gold. I think they're a 10-2 team. That's the case. But I think of those teams, of Penn State and Wisconsin, I think Penn State's more likely, given where it's coming.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right. Where are we going next, Dan? Good game.
Thank you very much. Applause. Okay. This one is called Gust or Rust. So the way this works is we're going to look at games that have already happened. And we say this throughout the year. We say God, that win did not age well, that they only beat X team by 3 points. Or, you know what? In retrospect, the fact that they only lost by 3 to that team looks really good right now. So was a previous result early in the season, we'll call it the first 4 weeks of the year, was it a gust in a team's sails to get them where they are now? Or has that win or loss, whatever the result, has it rusted accordingly? So basically, has the win been, or has that game been a guster? Which, shout out to Guster. Okay. I have a list of games here, and you can tell me if you agree, disagree. I'm sure you've given this some thought. My first one is Auburn and their win over Oregon, I think, has aged really well.
Okay.
To Why? Come back and beat that team, I think Oregon's really good. And to beat a really good team in week one with Oregon's defense playing what looked to be on a high level, and the fact that they won that game with Bo Nix not playing all that well, I think it's a good-looking win.
Interesting.
Oregon's in the top 10, and they weren't then. Oregon has improved since then, so it seems impressive.
Okay.
Do you disagree?
Yeah. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. It's just funny looking back at some of these early season games and what we thought of a team coming into the year, and why we're playing this game is now how we feel about that win or those particular teams now. And man, Auburn, every year Auburn, it feels like they pull a stunt like that and they enter the remaining portion of their conference schedule with so much prompt. They did enough to win defensively. They just needed more help on offense, and it's such a shame to waste that effort. So, it's an impressive win. I will give them that.
I think it's aged well. I have one that has not aged well here, Ty. Michigan needing overtime to beat Army.
No, that's not a good one.
It has not aged well. Army's offense, in terms of points per drive, shout out to Danalytics. Last year, returning a lot on offense. Not everything. Last year, they were sixth nationally in points per drive. They played slowly, but on all those long drives, they seem to do something pretty good. Generally score. This year, they're 72nd in points per drive. Michigan needing overtime. Losing the ball. Shooting yourself in the foot repeatedly against a team like that. It hasn't aged well, Ty. That's a ruster to me.
I have Wisconsin over Michigan.
As aging well or not well?
Aging not well for Michigan. In light of recent events.
Interesting, yeah, because you can look at all of these from different perspectives.
Wisconsin 35, Michigan 14. It was a big deal. It raised eyebrows when Wisconsin won that game.
Right.
And yet, despite all the talk about Michigan's shaky offense, it's still just a two-loss team with a really good defense. And if not for this game, we're, what, probably looking at a one-loss Michigan at home against Ohio State last week of the year? Right. 1 week after, mind you, Ohio State plays Penn State. That's a good situation for Michigan. I don't care what their record is. The atmospherics of that are really strong for Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't age well for Michigan because Wisconsin got destroyed by Ohio State. And it works even more against Michigan. Michigan's a team that I'm very interested now in moving forward. I've gotten over all the mental anguish of watching them destroy Notre Dame by 31 or whatever the hell the score was.
Yeah.
And I've been saying it, you have too, that we've been waiting for this offense to click. Now, I don't know if it really truly clicked against Notre Dame, but it felt like in the second half of that Penn State game that they were able to build up some momentum. And they carried it through in the Notre Dame game. And grant, the conditions were terrible, but they jumped out in front. They're up 17-0 at half, and it felt like a lot more. Scored 45 points against still a pretty good defense. Maybe now they are building towards something. It's a shame that they have this loss, because if they played it again, I'd be curious to see what happens in like week 13.
Yeah, the tentacles of the Michigan-Notre Dame game. So it makes the Penn State close win look more impressive, because we now know what Michigan's capable of, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Makes the Penn State and makes Georgia's win over Notre Dame slightly less impressive if you're able to run on Notre Dame like that. If that, and granted, the conditions are totally different, but that was a home game for Georgia. They weren't able to separate themselves from Notre Dame the way that Michigan was able to. So now you're just, okay, maybe we're downgrading Georgia just a little bit. I have this on my sheet as Wisconsin beating Michigan has aged well.
Interesting.
That win over Michigan is a little bit more impressive. The way that they did it, the way that they're able to run on them, I think makes Wisconsin look better, even with the loss to Illinois and the way that they lost to Ohio State.
Hmm.
So that's just the different perspective. I have another one here. USC losing to BYU has not aged well.
No, God, no, not at all.
Wow. BYU has been a struggle. USC beating Utah and needing to come back to win to beat Colorado is not great, but it's been a very strange mountain region year, especially for USC beating Utah, losing to BYU and the way that they had to come back to beat Colorado. But that specific win or that specific loss to BYU has not aged well at all.
No, I agree. Okay.
Washington losing to Cal.
Ooh. Ooh, 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 ooh.
No, not so good.
No.
It's not aged well.
No.
Again, weird circumstances, long delay, but and Cal was okay on offense that day, and they had Chase Garbers, but we're going to look back later on in the season and say, how did that, what, really? Okay. Jacob Eason's pretty good. What do you have? Any others?
That was the big one for me. The Michigan-Wisconsin one is the one that really stands out. I went back through and looked. That's the one that jumps out to me.
I have Florida State being Louisville as something that has aged well.
I would agree with that.
Mostly because I personally would like to drive the Mikhail Cunningham bandwagon.
Mikhail. Yeah.
Mikhail's Navy? That's a thing.
Not bad.
That we can now incorporate.
Sure.
Into the Twos crew somehow. I love when a quarterback seems very comfortable. And Mikhail Cunningham looks very, very comfortable throwing the ball and running the ball. And I'm just in, Ty.
He's using his chosen name now.
That's true. Well, he's using his birth name.
His birth name.
Choosing his birth name, yeah.
He's chosen to go by his birth name.
I have one final item here about aging, and I don't know how I feel right now about it. And I want to ask you. Illinois losing to Nebraska.
Hmm.
What is the fallout from that? Does that look better for Nebraska more than it looks worse for Illinois?
Wow. That's sort of right on the line, isn't it?
Lower middle class Big Ten takes here, Ty. That's what I'm looking for.
Wow. Illinois, by the way, drive for six, still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Drive is alive.
They lost to Nebraska by a 42-38 score.
They lost late. Yeah. They gave it away.
Lost that game late. I still think it looks worse for Nebraska. It's just
to barely edge out Illinois.
Illinois is a story.
Mm-hmm.
Because they might get to six and because they beat Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still not even in the Louisville category of a team that we're looking at and like, hey, they're 5-2. How'd that happen? Like, that's a mm-hmm. great story. It's a great story that Illinois beat Wisconsin, and it'd be fun if they got to six wins, but it's still Illinois.
Right.
And I mean, no disrespect to the Illinois fans listening, but let's be honest, it's still Illinois. I don't think that is not something Scott Frost is putting in his trophy case.
No. I think you're right. They tried to give that game away. They tried to give the ball away so many times, and Illinois did everything they could to just kind of take advantage and run away with a win. And the fact that Nebraska has gotten to this point, now they've dealt with a lot of injuries, but even when relatively healthy on offense, that offense has not been that good, at least in terms of consistency. It's close call. It's a definite close call, which says more than I think either one of us ever could. All right, Ty.
Yes.
Final game. I just require one team from you.
Okay.
Which team, or I guess if you have multiple teams, we are honoring Novembert. And the reason we honor Novembert is because of 2014 when Arkansas just became a murderer.
Yes.
Arkansas just decided to start destroying teams. I think they shut out both LSU and Ole Miss in consecutive weeks, or almost shut out. I can look that up or you can look that up. But who is your Novembert team to break through the ice, the frigid waters of the late season after a slow start?
Interesting. Okay.
In my mind, I took slow start to mean they're currently 500 or below. But maybe you have a different definition, and I'll leave it open to interpretation for what slow start means.
Well,
who do you think turns it on unexpectedly during as they cut through these frigid waters like an icebreaker ship.
Like an icebreaker ship. I have a couple here.
Okay.
That I'm curious to get your opinion on. The first one for me is Stanford.
Ooh, I considered Stanford.
Yeah, Stanford's interesting to me. Now, Stanford started the year with a win over Northwestern, an ugly game, 17-7, and then three straight losses at USC, at Central Florida, and against Oregon. Now, those are tough teams.
For sure.
But then they almost lost to Oregon State. Then they didn't look good at all offensively against Washington, though they held them down. They lost to UCLA in a bit of a surprise.
Third string quarterback,
and just beat Arizona this weekend. So remaining on the schedule, Colorado, Washington State, Cal, and Notre Dame. The fact that they've got KJ Costello back, the fact that he actually looked really good in his first start back since September 21st, I think that's a promising indicator for Stanford moving forward. You know how I feel about that Notre Dame game at the end of the year, right?
That Notre Dame game, weirdly,
in Palo Alto every year scares the crap out of me.
Yeah.
I could see Stanford mounting a little bit more of a charge here, looking like they're a better team on offense now with Costello back at the helm.
I tried. I was standing in front of the portrait of Stanford's November at the Guggenheim, tilting my head in different directions to get perspectives and see if I could interpret something differently. The fact remains, they have Stevie Montez, they have Anthony Gordon, and they have Ian Book, I tried, left on the schedule, and their pass defense has not been all that good. And the KJ Costello and getting healthier on offense helps. The defense wasn't that good against Arizona. This has not been a good Arizona offense, even with Khalil Tate and Grant Gunnell, who is okay at times. Losing to UCLA, they have, I think, four games where they hit their percentile performance, according to SP Plus, is under, is 20% or under.
Okay.
That includes the Oregon State game. I think it's just not that year for Stanford. I keep thinking somehow it will be because they keep starting slow and finishing strong under David Shaw. It's just not there for me. I really tried though, Ty. Who's your other team?
Well, I've got a couple here. I'd be inclined to say UCLA if the schedule weren't so brutal. But
oh, okay.
At Utah.
Also considered them.
Quote unquote, at USC, crosstown
rival.
It's
at USC. It's there.
At USC. But they have played much, much better the last couple weeks. So that's an interesting play for me. Florida State's interesting. Just because.
Also consider them.
Yeah, just because I feel like they're going to fully steer into the all Cam Akers offense. And I'm fine with that.
Sure.
And K-State. K-State's another one I threw out there. Now, I'm less confident in K-State than the others, but K-State now, of course, with their win over Oklahoma this past weekend, could be in a situation where more people know about them, more teams are watching them. Chris Kleiman's fantasy factory is very much a thing on this show. You know that.
I do know that. So basically, for K-State, because they're a 5-2 team, this is not, I don't think we can consider them having a slow start. They lose to Oklahoma State and Baylor, the Oklahoma State game on the road. They win at Mississippi State, which is not as impressive given where Mississippi State has been since then, but still impressive for a first-year coach and all the changes happening in Manhattan. And then, you know, beating Oklahoma. It's hard to say that they've had a slow start. But the question for them would be, now that they're 5-2, can they win 9? So they basically, can they split, I guess, Texas and
Iowa
State?
I think they could beat Texas right now.
Because it's Kansas on the road, sure, which does look tougher. Does look tougher. Kansas has been pretty explosive, especially on the ground. Texas, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Iowa State. 9-3 Chris Kleiman's first year. With a shade of optimism from Ty Hildenbrandt.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for my team?
Ooh.
I've got the Tennessee Vols. I've got Tennessee. I'm going to make the case for a Tennessee team that is going to come on strong in November. They should beat UAB. They beat Kentucky last year with a quarterback, but also with a really, really good Kentucky defense. So they beat them last year. Mizzou might be spiraling. Now Kelly Bryant's hamstring is hurt. I understand it's in Columbia and Mizzou is a lot better at home. They've been a nightmare on the road, and they should beat Vandy. So I think the potential for Tennessee going undefeated in November and wildly inflating expectations for 2020. So they'd be finishing the season, what, 7-5? Yeah. Currently they are 3-5. So they'd be finishing with 4 wins and getting to 7-5, going to a bowl game and becoming a sleeper 2020 team. I think it's, well, you look at their first two losses. Georgia State was right there. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to poke fun at Tennessee. Georgia State was right there, as was BYU. So it's not like we're talking about a Tennessee team far away from being 5-3 right now. Now, losing to those two teams the way that they did, totally and completely inexcusable. But coming off of the South Carolina game, the Mississippi State game, if they win those two games, which, again, a decent team should be able to do, we are putting Tennessee in a far different context right now.
At
least a scrappy team. And I think a scrappy team could be beating Kentucky and Mizzou and Vandy. So I have Tennessee right now, and I know they're beat up. Daryl Taylor got hurt against South Carolina. He's one of the better edge rushers in the SEC. Greg Emerson has been very good. Jarrett Garantano has been good, Jarrett Garantano, lately. I like Ty Chandler. Juwan Jennings, one of the better receivers in the SEC, 100%. I am just preparing myself for the offseason onslaught of Tennessee. And that's where I think it's going to come from.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think they can be a November icebreaker. No, that was the main team I locked in. I considered Florida State and UCLA, but I couldn't fully talk myself into them. Now, Ty, before we go, the seafaring squad of the week. Shout out to D3 for really going for it with nicknames that have to do with the ocean. I don't know if you've been around this area. I know you vacation in this state sometimes. The Salisbury University in Maryland, the Fighting Seagulls. You ever been to Salisbury, Maryland?
I've driven through Salisbury, Maryland, actually.
So the first thing that comes up on YouTube when you look up Salisbury, Maryland is the 10 worst cities in Maryland.
What?
I don't know if that's true. I hope it's not true. It used to be Salisbury State, not to be confused with Salisbury Steak, and Salisbury, Maryland has nothing to do with the Salisbury Steak. But apparently Genghis Khan does. That's another show on another day.
Sure.
The Salisbury Seagulls are 6-0 with wins over Wisconsin, Oshkosh, and Wesley, which is huge, Ty. If you know the NJAC, like I know the NJAC, the New Jersey Athletic Conference, which I guess Salisbury's in, even though they're in Maryland, that's a big win. This is a dominant lacrosse and men's track school. Alumni include Steve Bisciotti, it's the owner of the Ravens, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Dan Quinn, it's pretty good, at least at the time we're recording it, coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And I don't know if you know this person, but the aspiring meteorologist in you might. Mike Seidel, Weather Channel?
Of course.
Is he a big name?
I think he's a pretty big name. He's been there a while.
Is he bigger than, what's the name of the Jack dude?
Jim Cantore? No, he's not bigger than
Jim Cantore. He's not a Cantore.
But they've taken Seidel out into some of the Hurricanes.
What is to you?
He's also a Penn Stater, I should add.
Oh, he went to both?
Yeah.
Okay. What is to you the prime time Weather Channel assignment? Is it hurricane? Is it blizzard? It has to be hurricane, right?
I think it's got to be hurricane, right?
I mean, there is something about a blizzard with empty streets, but I think that's also more local. Like, I don't know how many people care if Boston is under a blanket.
I have an idea, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Mike Seidel's Twitter. He has 2.6 million followers.
It's unbelievable. I saw that as well.
Would a Two's Cruise secret verbal be in order here?
Yeah, what do you want to do?
It needs to be nautically themed. If we're going to go at Mike Seidel, you come at the king, you best not miss.
Right.
But the theme of the night was gusts of wind and icebreakers and skippers and hulls below deck.
Right.
Do we have anything of that ilk that we could throw at Mr. Seidel?
Weather related for Mike Seidel. That's how you pronounce it, right?
Yes.
Weather related for Salisbury University Seagull, Mike Seidel. Something about how he feels about it. I mean, it has to be something ocean related, squalls. Should people be tweeting at him to try to influence? I know it goes alphabetically, right? Like there's a Hurricane Beatrice and then the next one has to start with a C, right?
Sure.
But what would be the most college football hurricane name? It would probably have to be a Miami player.
It would have to be a Miami.
Is there a player with a unique first name?
Nikosi?
Nikosi's pretty good. Hurricane Wilfork?
Hurricane Wilfork?
What kind of sway do you have with the National Weather Service? can we, who do we slip some cash to?
Right.
At the is that a place, the National Weather Service?
Sure.
Who do we slip some cash to get Hurricane Wilfork a thing when W comes up again?
Hurricane Wilfork. Okay. It's
Hurricane Wilfork.
At Mike Seidel, S-E-I-D-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
All one word.
Yep.
Tweet that at him about Hurricane Wilfork. Again, yep. Do not mention in your tweet or anywhere for that matter that we sent you. It's why we call it a secret verbal.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of followers. My guess is he'll have no idea why he's getting all these tweets, nor will he care.
But no, he won't.
He's a Penn Stater. It's worth a shot.
I didn't know that. Your final thought about the Salisbury University seagulls. Seagulls mate for life and are able to filter salt from the salt water they drink through their nostrils.
Hey, there you go.
So, fighting seagulls. 6-0. I feel good about them finishing out the year undefeated. Icebreakers.
Alrighty, well, on that note, for my Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, Captain Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for joining us here on another Two's Cruise where we talk college football and everything out in international waters, Dan. We will be back on Thursday morning where we will preview all that Week 10 has to offer. But in the meantime, ahoy, babies! Am I doing this right? I don't know.
Oh, aye, Cap'n.
Wish you all fair seas and fair winds and, yeah.
And the like?
And the like.
Fair winds and the like.
Stay solid.
Peace.